Welcome to the Medicine of Success podcast. This is Dr. Raul Henson, your host. And for tonight, we have a special guest. Last week was our episode was about U.S. Investing strategies. And tonight, we have a guest that will talk about the local side of Philippine investing and how to do it, the different types of investments, how to start, and especially in this COVID quarantine, what are you going to do and beyond, okay? And our guest for tonight, actually, I just give you a little bit of introduction. I met him in 2013. He did a talk on stocks, I think investing in one of our mid-year conventions in ophthalmology in Subic. And I approached him and I told him if he can go to Angeles and teach us on how to do stock trading. And he did. And he taught my family. He spoke and we learned from there. I started investing in stocks. So I've been investing in stocks for quite some time, but I veered towards other investment vehicles, but I still stayed with stocks. And I'm grateful to our guest now because he is a good friend. He was also a resident in ophthalmology in St. Luke's. And he's now a consultant and is very active in promoting investments, different types of investments in our country. So without further ado, let's welcome Dr. Francis Hawk. Hello, Francis. Welcome to the show.
Sir, good evening, sir.
Yes. Before we start our episode, I just want to ask you your educational background. Tell us a little bit something about yourself. And your investing journey, where did it start?
Okay. So I took my primary studies in St. Jude Catholic School. So it's the Catholic school beside Malacañang, no? So I was there since preschool to grade 6, no? To high school. Then I graduated college, Ateneo de Manila, with a course in BS Biology. Graduated magna cum laude. Then took up medicine in Ateneo School of Medicine and Public Health. No? I was part of the pioneer batch for the school. So graduated with academic distinction as well. Then I took up my residency training in ophthalmology at the St. Luke's Eye Institute. And now I am a full diplomate of the Philippine Board of Ophthalmology. So a little background of my investing journey. I think I'm way ahead of my contemporaries, no, in terms of my investing background. Why? I can vividly remember when I was in grade school, grade 1 or grade 2, when every time we will go to the library, you know, so my classmates would always go get the comic section of Manila Bulletin. But what I would get is the business section of Manila Bulletin. I would open the section on stocks, no, and I would take note of two companies, the stock price of two companies, namely PLDT and Urban Bank. So I would list down the price every day. Then I can still remember na these were the pre-internet days, no. So what I do with the price, no, when I go get home, I would plot it in a Manila paper. So I can still remember that, and I would tell my mom, no, na how much her PLDT already appreciated, something like that. No, so I'm a little advanced. No, so nobody taught me about it. No, it's more of I wanted to learn more about the financial system. Then in high school, I was already invested into mutual funds, no? Mainly equity funds. No, way back in high school. Then in college, I started learning about the stock market, and saving up money, no, from my allowance, no, so I can invest it in the stock market. The minimum to open back then was like 5,000 pesos, no, so I took advantage of it. Then med school, I was med school, the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 happened when I was in med school. So it was a time of great opportunity, no? So I can still remember going around the classroom with the laptop in hand, no, telling my classmates, na we hit bottom, you should start investing the stock market, no? I think only 2 or 3 people listened, no? So I was able to catch the bottom 2008-2009. Then it was a good journey until the current crisis. So that's my brief investment background, no? So I'm into stocks, bonds, real estate, gold, and other financial instruments.
Wow, that's a very nice journey, Francis, no? Because I remember you telling me about that, no, when you were in grade school. Yeah, that was a nice story. And imagine if all of us, no, all of us listening here, doctors, were able to invest in 2008, just maybe at least 100,000, 500,000, or a million, no? Imagine how much it is now. Imagine how much it is now. So it's good to know that we have to invest early, no? So my next question to you, no? When should we invest?
So as doctors, no, the perfect time really to invest is during our residency. Why? Our residency is technically our first job, no? It's the first time you are getting paid, no? While undergoing training, no? So the perfect time is during our residency. Also, if you're taking up residency in a public hospital, your monthly stipend is way higher than in private, no? So to the tune of 50,000-60,000 pesos, no? So you can actually save a lot and invest, no, with that 60,000. Kasi that's you won't need 60,000 to live a resident's life, no? So almost half of it you can start investing already. So residency is the perfect time to start investing.
I agree. No, I agree for residents. But how about what if somebody, not even a doctor, is listening? No, for example, an employee, he started, you know, after college, he started work. Is it the same? Of course, they should start early, investing early, right?
Yeah, yes. Because when you start investing early, you have two laws working against, working for you, no? The laws of compounding, which we will discuss later, and the law of averaging. So you want to be in the market early. So the earlier you are in the market, no, the power you can see clearly the power of compounding.
So I see.
So start during your first job, no. Start during your first job, no. Set aside kahit maliit lang, a small amount, no. So that you are already invested.
Agree. So some people are not even doctors are listening. So at least we tell them when to start. Start early, right? So now you want to start investing early, but what are the basic things to do before investing? Like what, suppose you're earning, like you said, 20,000, 50,000 a month. What should you do first before investing your money?
Okay, that's a very important question, no? We have what we call a financial pyramid. The financial pyramid, there's basically 3 steps in the financial pyramid. The foundation of the financial pyramid is all about protection. Then the second level is all about savings, and the third level is all about investing. So you cannot actually go straight to investing without securing yourself, your job, no? First, no? So always think of the first level first, no? Protection. So what comprises the first level? So first, you have to have an emergency fund, no? The emergency fund, as this COVID pandemic has shown us, is a non-negotiable thing. So you have to have at least 6 to 9 months worth of your living expenses set aside as an emergency fund. So that's the first. So when you start working, your goal first is compute what's your cost of living, no? Monthly cost of living, no? Your non-negotiables, no? Your utilities, your food, your cost, your shelter, no? Compute that. So what do you spend monthly for your cost of living? So multiply that by 6 or 9, no? The minimum is 6 times 6. The safe amount is times 9, no? So let's say you're living 20,000 a month, no? Times 6 months, it's 120. So you set aside between 120,000 to 150,000 as emergency fund, no? Pero as we mature in our practice of medicine, of course, our cost of living also increases, no? So if your standard of living right now is 100,000 a month, no? Multiply that by 6, no? So you have to have at least 600 to 900,000, no, in emergency fund. So that's the first step, emergency fund. Okay, once you have your emergency fund set aside and taken care of, your next step is your life insurance. Okay? Life and health insurance. So as this COVID pandemic has shown us, no, the cost of hospitalization, no, so far that we have seen in the Philippines, no, for those with mild pneumonia, ranges between 600,000 to with those with severe pneumonia, no, with ICU hospitalization, can go up to 2 million. The highest hospitalization bill so far that I saw was 6 million.
What?
So, yes. So that's, I think that's more than a month stay in the ICU, no? Mm-hmm. So what you want? So the problem here is PhilHealth before April 14 covered everything, no? All the costs of hospitalization for COVID, they covered. However, after April 14, no? So on April 15, PhilHealth started introducing what they call the case rate, no? So the case rate for COVID, no, for mild pneumonia is 40,000, no? So if you're hospitalized for, let's say, 400,000, deduct the PhilHealth of 40, the balance is either out of pocket or shouldered by your HMO. So this example shows us the importance of having a good and adequate life insurance coverage. No?
So plus health, right?
So actually, yes. And most life insurance, kasi, they have critical illness coverage.
Okay, I agree.
So the critical illness coverage is actually a percent of your total assured amount. No, let's say you're insured for 4 or 5 million pesos. The critical illness is a percentage of that. No, ranging from 1 to 1.5 to 2 million. Mm-hmm. So during this pandemic, I got 2 emails, no, from my insurance providers, telling me that they are covering the cost of hospitalization as critical illness benefit, which is good. So yeah,
same here. I got one.
I'm thanking my kasi that's peace of mind for me.
Yes,
no, knowing
exactly.
Should I be hospitalized for COVID? No, because it's a risk for our profession. We're doctors. Yeah. We are actually one of the most at-risk population.
Diba? Exactly.
So getting that email from my 2 insurance providers, that's a sigh of relief. No, however, I had this one insurance provider, who told me they are not covering COVID since it's a pandemic, and a pandemic is part of their exclusion criteria. So the lesson here is you have to have a good life insurance provider.
Okay? So it seems you have
not all. Multiple. Not all. Yes, I have multiples. So that's how you minimize your risk. The one caveat with your life insurance provider is your life insurance provider should outlive you. Mm-hmm. Do you agree, sir?
Agree.
So they will be the one. They will be the one paying the benefits, no, and paying your family for your benefits, no. So they should outlive you. So you have to know which of the insurance providers are in the pink of health.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And then I remember, as doctors, we rely on our friends for our, you know, hospitalization. Our doctor friends, it's free yes. PF, but they don't know that, of course, the hospital bill is a lot, no? Yes. So some doctors don't even have health insurance. They should have health insurance. I mean, it's our profession is really, really.
Actually, you know, I agree with you, sir. I have a rule of thumb, no, for doctors or for anyone. Everyone should have health insurance. No, as doctors are the only one wave for us is the PF as part of professional courtesy. However, the cost of hospitalization, the cost of admission, the cost of medicine, the cost of implants, it's still industry rate. Okay, mm-hmm. So for health insurance, the ideal is for males age 45 to start getting health insurance already. Mm-hmm. For females, okay. age 50.
Mm.
Okay. So, okay. here, this is where your family history will come in. Should you have very strong family history of the primary illnesses, no, like uncontrolled hypertension, diabetes, CA, very mm-hmm. important. If you have very strong family family history, you want to get your life insurance, your health insurance, at least 5 to 10 years before those illnesses first appeared in your family. Why? Mm-hmm. Because the presence of those illnesses can exclude you from coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be uninsurable. They have mm-hmm. this term, uninsurable. So you want to be covered already before you become uninsurable.
No, because also, these insurance companies are they're really, your tactics are really.
Yes, they have to make money as well.
They have to make money as well. So they have to, yeah, I agree.
Yes. So, yun, sir. So for males, again, rule of thumb is 45. For females, age 50. But if with very strong family history, at least 5 to 10 years earlier.
Agree. I've had insurance since I was like 30 years old. So, you know, it's part of it. You should have some insurance somewhere.
Yes.
How about wait, so that's the basic? Is that the basic? That's insurance and the emergency fund? Yeah.
So that's the first level, sir.
First level,
First level of the financial pyramid. No? So all about protection. So you want to protect yourself, no, from uneventualities, no, unexpected events and emergencies, no, like this COVID pandemic. This is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. You want to have an emergency fund, no, should your cash flow be suddenly be threatened, no, you want to have life insurance, no, with good critical illness coverage, and health insurance as well. Mm-hmm. So actually, there are some insurance that they have add-ons, no? What we call the disability insurance. No?
Mm-hmm.
Should you be unable to perform your, be rendered as a disabled, no? They give you a sort of a pension. So that is a percentage of your.
So there's a such a thing, no?
Yes, yes. There's
add-on.
It's an add-on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the first level.
First level.
Going to the second level of the financial pyramid is all about savings, no? Saving.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to save so that you'll have excess money to invest. Because if you don't have excess money to invest, then you won't be able to tackle the third part of the pyramid, which is investing. Okay, so number two, your second level is all about savings, no? Mm-hmm. Saving for yourself, no? Personal savings, no? Educational savings for your children, and again, retirement savings for you as well.
So, how many percentage? Do you have like a ballpark figure? How many percentage? Okay. Or it really depends on the person, because
no,
it's good
actually,
to tell them, you know?
Personally, I follow what I call the 50-40-10 rule. But that's a modification already since I'm Filipino. I was born matipid, no? So I was born thrifty. No, I was raised thrifty. I was raised in a very thrifty environment and family. So 50% of my monthly income automatically goes to my savings account.
Mm-hmm.
So 40% goes to my needs account and 10% goes to my wants account.
Okay.
So those accounts are separate from each other. So they are physically three separate bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to mix your money into one account. Why? You'll have this tendency now, once you reach 500,000, 600,000, 1 million, you'll be thinking of your next vacation.
Agree.
So you'll be using up money that you're supposed to invest on your next vacation, because now as millennials, no, I'm a part of the millennial group, no, we live in what we call a YOLO society, no, you live only once, no.
Yes.
So that's the mentality now. So by physically separating your money into those three different accounts, no, based on purpose. So again, your savings, your needs, and your wants. So what comprises your needs? No, those are the things you need to in order to live a decent life. No, so you pay for your utilities, your food, no, your internet. Mm-hmm. Your fuel, your gasoline, your transportation, no? So those are the
basic
needs,
no? Basic,
yes, those that you need to live a decent
to
life.
Live, yeah.
Then I allocate only 10%, no, of my monthly income to my wants. So let's say I want to travel. So let's say I want to travel. So I would have to wait for that one's account to fill up with cash to finance my travel. So that's how I do it. That's okay, how
so
I do it.
50, 40, 10. 50 is savings, 40 is needs, 10 are wants. That's a very good idea, no? So at least our listeners have a clue on what to do and with their money.
That already is a modification because the original, I think, is 30, 20 something something.
Yeah.
But the original is more of for Western individuals wherein they earn a lot, no? Yeah. And they spend a lot, no?
Yeah, I agree. Because for us, we don't really spend a lot. Eh?
Yes, we're thrifty.
We're kind of thrifty nation. So if like for example, summarize. So the level one is really emergency life insurance.
Protection.
Once you pay for that, once you set aside money for that, and then the next level is the savings, which is.
Yes.
So the savings will go to the next level will go to savings and then to needs and wants. So for example, you fill that up and you already have excess money. What's next?
Yes, then you can start investing.
So that's the 50%, the 50.
So what I do, for the savings, no? So for the savings account, anything that is more than my emergency fund, no? So let's say I set aside 1 million peso emergency fund. Anything in excess of 1 million goes to my investment account already.
Straight,
yes.
Okay.
So again, that would depend on your cost of living. So compute first, then make sure you have an emergency fund. So any excess, no, from the 6 to 9 months, you can already start investing. Because remember, your money in a savings account doesn't earn you anything.
Exactly. Especially the emergency fund. That's like, that's in the cash account. Eh?
Yes.
And the emergency.
The emergency fund, actually, you can put it in a money market fund. No problem with that.
Yeah, agree. Yes. Money market or the time deposit.
Short term savings account or other accounts. The main purpose of that is so that you will not be tempted to touch it.
Agree. Yes. So regarding investments, no. But before we go there, we already touched the first level, second level, third level, no, of our money, no. And then before we go to the different assets, no, and vehicles, what is cash flow important in investing?
No, cash flow is very important. Cash flow is king. It will dictate everything. you cannot run your life without cash flow.
So which means cash flow to the audience or to the listeners means money coming in from your salary, from your businesses, from whatever. Yeah. Can you explain? Baka you can explain.
I'll explain. Yeah. So as doctors, we were led to believe, no, or our only source of income is our professional income. So actually, your professional income is just one of the 7 income streams that you can have. So what you want to do is first secure your professional income. Then you want to have excess from your professional income so you can purchase additional income streams. No? So what are your other income streams? No? You can have a business income. You can have interest income. So interest income is from loans, no? So that's yung mga time deposits, bonds as interest income. Then you can have dividend income. Dividend income comes from ownership of shares, no, of a company. So that's another income stream. Then you can have rental income. That's from the ownership of properties. Then number 6 is your capital gains, no? So this is from the price appreciation of assets, no? It can be land, no? It can be stocks. It can be painting. No, it can be art, no, anything that can appreciate, no? And 7, the final income stream is your royalties, no. So as doctors, if you want, you can write a book, no, write a chapter, you get royalties from that, no. So those are your 7 income streams. So do not focus only on one income stream. Actually, you want to use your main income stream to purchase you additional income streams. I'll give this. This COVID gave us the perfect example. We are in lockdown for 2 months, no. So as doctors, no, in some specialties like us in ophthalmology, we are severely affected, no. So our cash flow, no, from our professional income, no, was suddenly cut, no. Sudden. It wasn't a slow decline. It was a sudden cut, no. So no income for 2 months, no. So that highlights the importance of the other income streams, no. So your interest income still pays interest, no, even in lockdown. Your dividend income still pays dividends, no. Your rental income got delayed, no, kasi because of the Bayanihan Act, no, wherein landlords, no, was advised, no, to delay collecting rental income for at least a month, no. Then your capital gains is still okay. Then your royalty is still okay. So that's the importance of multiple income streams, no? Even if one income stream is suddenly cut off, the other income streams are there to augment, no, or supplant that missing income stream.
Agree. 100% of the 7 income streams. So cash flow is important. And then now you have cash, okay? Now you're going to invest it. Now there's so many investment vehicles, no, in the market. No, there's sometimes it's just cash. You have cash. What are they going to do with it? We're going to talk about maybe 7 or 10. No, I'll just enumerate them. No, of course, cash, bonds, stocks, no, real estate, rates, which we'll talk later, insurance, and even cryptocurrency. You know, it's also an investment. No, can we talk each about, you know, quick lang about each of this? Like for example, let's start with cash. Is cash important? I mean, like, it's important cash flow, but in cash alone.
In times of crisis, no, cash is king. So you want to preserve your cash, no? Why? Because every time there's a crisis, there's an opportunity that comes after the crisis. So you want to preserve your cash during crisis so that during the recovery phase, you will have cash to deploy and purchase other income-generating assets. So again, that's the importance of cash. Preserve your cash during crisis, no? So matutong mamuluktot, no? Matutong magtipid, no, during crisis. Mm-hmm. Actually, the first step during a crisis is actually redo your budget. Why? We are all operating on a budget based on abundance. Mm-hmm. Okay? Those are the good years. Then suddenly we're hit with a crisis. The first thing to do is redo your budget because we are in war. We are at war. We are in war footing. We are in crisis mode. Mm-hmm. So you want to cut your expenses, no? So if you cut your expenses by half, you actually preserve your cash by twice as much. So your cash actually lasts you twice as long. So the easiest thing to do during a crisis is cut your expenses, no?
So, how about Francis? No, you have stocks, no, and you somehow know that something's happening. So is it good to place it, you know, convert it to cash, your stocks to cash?
Okay, so there are a lot of there are different school of thoughts, no, and there are different strategies. It would ultimately depend on your risk appetite. As we all know, a stock market crash is a very bad financial event, no? It can wipe out your asset, no, your stock asset, no, by 60-70%, no. If you cannot stomach such volatility, actually, it might be prudent and wise, no, to take some off the table. So you can convert it to cash. Actually, a lot of people when they think something bad will happen, no, or we're in crisis, they will liquidate some of their stock positions and retain some in cash. Others purchase bonds, no, and yet others purchase gold. No, gold is a safe haven asset in times of crisis. Yeah.
So before we go to gold, now you mentioned about bonds, no. What are bonds? For our listeners, they might want to know what our bonds are.
Okay, bonds are basically commercial papers, no? So it's an utang, no, in layman's term, no. So a corporation, let's say San Miguel, wants to build an airport, So if San Miguel borrows money from the bank will charge San Miguel 15% per annum. So what will San Miguel do? They issue bonds, no? These are commercial papers, no? It's an IOU, no? Basically, IOU money. They will release it to the public. They'll tell the public, I'll borrow your money for 5, 7, or 10 years, and I'll pay you 7, 8% interest. So, tayo as investors, instead of placing our money in a savings account, no, we can actually lend our money to San Miguel through that offering, no, through that bond offering. That way, it's a win-win situation, no. So San Miguel was able to borrow money at a cheaper rate. Tayo, we were able to get a higher interest rate than our savings account or our time deposit, no. Our time deposit is 1.125%. So bonds is 6, 7, 8%. So that's the, for me, that's a win-win situation. The only caveat with purchasing bonds is you have to lend your money only to corporations who have the capacity to pay you back. Kasi this is utang. This is an IOU. So I personally only get AAA rated companies. No, there's a bond rating. It's done by Phil Rating. It's a rating agency. There's several levels, no? A, B, C, D. So C below is already junk category. So that's already considered junk bond. So I personally limit my bond allocations to AAA rated companies.
Which is mga Ayala, of course, Ayala companies, actually, San Miguel.
I can still remember my first bond purchase was in second year med school. So I was able to scrape around, to raise around 100,000. I went to BPI, the Medical City branch. I told the teller I want to purchase bonds. No, I want to purchase Ayala bonds. The teller wasn't aware. I was referred to the manager. No, so I was able to purchase that bond with a yield of 8.8% per annum.
Wow, which is, that's nice.
Which is a good yield.
That's huge.
And,
that's
a good yield. And just imagine that bond purchased way back when I was second year med school is still paying me quarterly.
Wow.
Until
that's
now.
Nice.
Until
that's
now.
Nice.
So every
is it compounding? Is it, are you rolling it?
No.
No. So you're taking it out.
I'm taking it out. But the proper way to do it is roll it over.
Yeah. No? Pero, yeah, we'll talk about that later about compounding. How about Francis? No, how about the remember there's company corporate bonds. How about retail treasury bonds from the government?
I mean,
the government is like a corporation.
Yes.
What's better? I mean, you know, what's better, a corporate bond or treasury bond?
A country bond, no? So it's called treasury bill. It's issued I can't remember the term, and not protected, guaranteed by the Philippine government, no? So as long as the Philippine government's health is okay, then it's a good investment, no? The only problem is your retail treasury bonds, no? Your Philippine bonds, no? They come in 2, 5, 10 years bonds, no? The only problem is they offer a lower interest rate kasi the country, being a sovereign, can guarantee it better than a corporation. So there's a hierarchy, eh? Mm-hmm. But the country is always superior than a corporation in that country. Mm-hmm. So the rate that's part of the rating, eh? So mm-hmm. being superior and being more secure than a corporation in that country, the rates are much lower. So the average rate now currently is between 2-3%, no? But a few years back, no, our RTBs were as high as 6-7%.
Mm-hmm. How about the corporate bonds now? How much are they now?
Now
the
next one that will issue one, I think, will be BPI and Ayala. It's in the 3.5 to 4.5 range.
Yeah, so it's really, really low now, no?
It's really low. You know why? It's mm-hmm. low because a lot of people are buying it. There's so much mm-hmm. liquidity in the market because a lot of people move out from the stock market and went to the bond market in order to protect their assets. So
yeah.
It's basically law of supply and demand. No? So more buyers, no, they can ano yun, give offer a lower rate and there's still a lot of takers.
So the it's like an inverse ratio, not really inverse ratio proportion, because if there's a lot of stocks, then the bonds the parang ganon, di ba?
I think it's inversely correlated.
So if the stocks are going up, then the bonds interests are going down. Something
usually,
like that.
Usually. Yeah.
Not all the time, but it's usually.
Not all the time, but more often than not.
Yeah. And then, so from bonds, then there's the corporate bonds, retail treasury bonds. It's easy. You just go to the bank, no, and just get a bond from either a corporate bond or a retail treasury bond. But how about for stocks, no? Let's go to stocks. It's kind of popular, no? Stocks. How do you invest stock? Do you go individual stock picking? You go to the managed fund? Do you go to index funds?
Okay.
What's your take on this?
Okay. Let me share you my investment journey again, no? So I started with stocks, no? Again, I started high school with mutual funds, no? So mutual funds are basically managed funds, no? They invest your money in you can choose, no? You can invest it in bonds, stocks, or a balance of both, no? So back then I already invested in a 100% equity fund, no? In way back in high school. Then college, no? Since we're all busy with college and med school, I left it in the mutual fund, no? However, in med school, I suddenly have more time. So I was able to learn more about stock investing.
More time, so, in med school? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
It's how you manage your time.
Exactly. So it really depends on the med school. It really depends on the med school. Okay.
Yeah, so I had more time. I was able to study more about stocks. No? And I tried first, no, virtual trading, virtual investing. Then when I got the confidence, then I started managing it, buying individual stocks on my own. So that was very fortunate because I was able to be in the market in the 2008-2009.
Mm-hmm. Yes. How about your broker? Who are the brokers then? Brokers now are pretty much online.
Yes, my first broker is still called Financial. They are the first who offered the online trading platform. Mm-hmm. The advantage of an online trading platform is the commission rate is much lower.
Mm-hmm. So it's how much is the commission rate? I mean, if you don't mind,
I think 0.25.
0.25. Okay.
Yes.
That's decent. Yeah. Okay. So now you have like a mutual fund, a managed fund, because managed funds usually they are since they are managed, they have higher fees. That's why
they have a management fee. Yeah. Ranging from 2% per annum to as high as 5% per annum.
Yeah, so that's huge.
And they don't guarantee returns. Even if they lose money, you still pay them. Yes.
Exactly. Even Ray Dalio. You know Ray Dalio? Ray Dalio said the market is like the Olympics. You know, it's hard. It's hard to compete in the Olympics and the market is hard. So imagine those managing our funds. They're competing against, you have to be an Olympian in markets. Yes. So it's really difficult.
The problem with a lot of managed funds, no, again, it's a competition between managers, no. A lot of managed funds actually they end up closing at the end of the day. So here comes the very important lesson that was imparted to us by John Bogle, who pushed for a low cost index fund that simply tracks the index. So it's an index fund. So a perfect example is Vanguard. So that's one of the first, no, index tracking fund. No? So Vanguard, which charges a very, very low fee, no, just to cover the expenses. So actually, Warren Buffett advocated this, no, if you don't, for newbie investors, no, if you want to invest in the stock market, he only advises this, no. You put your money, you know, regularly in a low-cost index fund. And 90% of the time, you will outperform all other investors just by putting your money regularly in a low-cost index fund.
I agree with you. You know, it's because the index funds, there's different types of index funds. Like in the States, in the Vanguard There's like the S&P 500 index funds. There's a total stock index funds. There's so many, but I think the fees are 0.01%. Imagine that, 0.01%. That's so low. And how about in the Philippines? Are there what are the different types of index funds here?
So every bank here actually offers an index fund. So mm-hmm. basically, it just tracks the index. Mm-hmm. Again, in the Philippines, you have the option of either going via the FM ETF. It's the First Metro Exchange Traded Fund. So it's a fund track. It's an index tracking fund, but it's traded more like a stock, no? Mm-hmm. So you can easily buy and sell it anytime, no? And there are no management fees, no? Just the regular fees for buying and selling stocks. So that's one option. Then another option would be your bank run or bank index funds, no? Your BPI has one, BDO yeah. has one.
I think most of them, most of the banks have one.
Most yeah. most of them has, yes.
Yeah, every, it really just depends.
I think everyone has.
Yeah, I think everyone has.
Yes.
But to tell you the truth, I'm investing now in before we started the interview, I'm invested now in a BPI feeder fund, S&P 500 index fund here in the Philippines. Because remember, you cannot enroll in Vanguard. Actually, I tried. They said, hello.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought I lost you. Anyway, I remember when the first time I heard Vanguard, I tried to register in Vanguard, and I'm a Filipino, and you can't. And then yes. I looked for other venues, and then I found BPI. They have a S&P 500 index fund here. So we're lucky enough. At least there is, diba?
Yes.